The Urban Villa, A Prototype for Inner City Residences by Oswald Matthias Ungers. I think it's from 1977. First, criteria concerning the existing problems of habitation in inner cities. For several years, the population in most of the large cities in industrialized countries has been decreasing. This alarming fact is particularly obvious in countries like Germany and the US. The consequences of this steadily increasing exodus of city dwellers into the urban fringe areas, the suburbs, and the countryside lead to the slow decay of central city districts. Since 1970, New York City has lost more than 650,000 inhabitants. In some places, like Brooklyn, more than 70% of the population abandoned the city, leaving deserted residential areas behind. The New York City Planning Office is now considering turning these areas into urban farmland. Such extreme examples aside, one can also observe a general trend of abandonment in some of the larger German cities such as Cologne, Frankfurt, Munich, and Berlin. This occurs, however, mostly in cities with a high percentage of foreign workers. The movement of the inhabitants into the periphery also pulls production out of the cities and with it the main source of tax income. As production moves out, the number of jobs decreases and unemployment increases. As a result, the city has less tax income but finds itself burdened with higher social costs. This leads to the decay of social institutions, of schools, hospitals, public transportation, and other services because of the lack of public funds. This is a major reason for those who can afford it to leave the city, and the cycle resumes. In some cases, particularly in American cities, the vicious cycle accelerates faster and faster until the city goes bankrupt and can only be saved from total economic and physical breakdown by state and federal interference. The result of a recent poll in Germany by the Institute for Demoskopie in Allensbach shows that big cities are losing their attraction as residential places. 74% of the German population would prefer to live in the country rather than the city. Apparently, the reasons for the abandonment of the city are also the result of changes in lifestyle. Both the car and television helped to create this trend. The time has passed when the move to the countryside also meant a retreat from society. Because of the improvement in communications, the physical as well as the intellectual distance has been substantially reduced. The city is now competing, particularly as far as the environmental qualities are concerned, with life in the country. The future of the city therefore depends entirely on the solution of the dichotomy between city and country. If the city is going to survive as a social, political, economic, and not the least as a cultural entity, the survival is only possible if living and environmental conditions can be provided in the city similar to those of a more natural environment. To improve the urban habitat, destructive traffic planning must cease and current mass housing patterns change. Second, criteria concerning the existing problem of housing. Usually, housing design is reduced to two residential types, the one-family house, detached or row house type, and the apartment, offered only as an impersonal rentable unit, as a consumer item. More and more, the apartment is considered second beat to the one-family house, which only a limited group of people can afford. Recent polls show that 20% of the people living in cities would prefer a one-family house to an apartment. For various reasons, the trend toward one-family house ownership increased in the last several years, not the least because of the rise in social wealth. The trend continues despite the many inconveniences inherent in one-family house ownership. the high cost of construction, the length of commuting time, the lack of adequate service facilities. Simultaneously, as the demand for one family houses expands, valuable recreational land on the peripheries of the cities is being destroyed by the proliferation of little boxes, so-called bungalows, thereby preventing any public use. The real motivation depends, however, less on economic and social considerations, but rather on the desire for independence and a free expression of the personality. Quite simply, on the increasing desire for self-determination and the improvement of the quality of life. An ordinary apartment can scarcely satisfy this most understandable desire because it forces limitations onto the dweller and his activities and restricts his personal development. It is therefore not surprising that the construction of apartments recently decreased compared with the construction of one-family houses. One might ask then, is there a housing type between the two extremes, combining the advantages of the two types and at the same time eliminating the disadvantages? Ideally, it would be a housing type with sufficient qualities to also improve the urban environment. A housing type with 6 to 8 individually designed apartments, not unlike the housing types of the historic urban villa, could easily meet these qualifications. Third, criteria concerning the housing type of the urban villa as a new form of urban residence. The housing type of the urban villa should be promoted more than is currently the case for the obvious reasons. The empirical facts. The remodelling of historical urban villas to current needs has, in most cases, proven that this housing type is well suited for residential as well as commercial use and that it can be adapted fairly easily to the individual needs of the inhabitants. As we know from many examples, the historic urban villa areas in most cities remain of high physical quality, though in most cases the social structure has completely changed. Today, most of the so-called Grundzeitvillen are occupied by 3 or 4, sometimes even more, families. Now the social mixture in much more diverse in such areas than it used to be, and exceedingly more so than it is in newly built areas. The commercial mixture of the former villa areas is also more complex than in new developments. In the historic villa areas, one can still find the small store, the individual workshop, the studio, or the personal office right next to the apartment. The same is true for the mixture of apartment types, which are multifold and are reflective of the personal needs, economic possibilities, and individual desires of the inhabitants. The social diversity of the villas is also reflected in the architectural language. The buildings are not only the result of various architectural styles and ambitions, but they also represent a typological vocabulary of formal richness. Hardly any other residential area has a similar quality of urban elegance and generosity because of the relationship between private and the public amenities. Such qualities occur even with such high density as 150 to 200 people per hectare, which is equivalent to the average density in a new multi-story development. Design aspect. The housing type of the urban villa contains 6 to 10 maximum apartments, each one different. The maximum number of floors should be limited to 4 or less. In a villa of that size, it would be possible to plan apartment units of different size and arrangements and also with varying relations to the outdoor space. The apartments on the ground floor could be extended into private gardens, while the apartments on the second floor could have terraces and loggias. The ones on the upper floors could have access to roof gardens. Each housing unit should differ in architectural styles, exposing a wide richness of form and materials. Functional aspects. Varying apartment sizes and plans aside, it would be possible to integrate private, commercial, and public use into the building. Preferably, this should include small offices and special commercial facilities such as private schools, kindergartens, and studios, etc., as well as branches of public administrative and service institutions. Each villa would then carry functions in addition to the strictly residential ones and thus enrich the context as well as contributing to the urban fabric. Some villa units could even be planned as monofunctional facilities, such as private clinics, rooming houses, small hotels, or office buildings. Economic considerations. The urban villa type is well suited for private investors because it offers affiliated groups a chance to form housing cooperatives. Further, it offers the possibility for non-corporate investment to branches of business that ordinarily do not deal with housing. For the small landowners, it is a chance for a manageable size financial investment, thus breaking the monopolization of the housing and land market by large corporations. Socioeconomic and structural aspects. From the socioeconomic point of view, the promotion of the construction of smaller housing units would be particularly supportive to the small and medium-sized construction business. Because of the growth of large-scale construction, particularly in housing, the small contractors were almost completely pushed out by the big companies. This phenomenon led to the loss of entrepreneurial capabilities, lack of initiative, de-bureaucratization of the construction sector, and the loss of quality of workmanship, to name only a few. If this trend in the building trade could be brought to a halt, the promotion of the construction of smaller housing units would seem to be the right step to take. Technological aspects. The testing of new low-energy building and operating methods would seem a suitable testing ground for medium-sized housing types, especially in the area of solar energy for heating. Other energy-saving methods in new building materials, special house and plan forms could be tested with much less risk in smaller projects than in large-scale constructions. With such projects, the technological waste could be substantially reduced and the qualities of materials improved. It would stimulate cost-saving construction and at the same time favour the competition in the housing market. Social aspects. The housing type of the urban villa is much more responsive to the needs of the user and the personalisation of lifestyle than any other type, even the one-family house, at least as far as the social context and the realization of special needs such as the construction of a swimming pool, a sauna, or other common facilities which are more easily accomplished communally than privately. It is also much easier to organize a personal habitat on the relatively small scale of an apartment, since for most people an entire house is too much of an economic involvement and personal responsibility. One also has to consider the productive restraints brought about by the industrialization of mass housing. These can only be overcome by the elimination of those constraints themselves, i.e., by the return to more personal production methods better geared towards specific conditions, including conventional construction processes and do-it-yourself work. Urban design aspects. As an urban design element, villa-type housing has great potential, fulfilling not only the requirements for a highly personalized and pluralistic urban environment, but also provides for the appropriate social density and urban infrastructure. Villa-type houses are more suitable for use in historical areas where they can be integrated relatively easily. In most cases, the construction of large-scale housing blocks requires urban renewal with all its well-known social, political, economic, and physical consequences. Those repercussions can be avoided by villa-type housing because it is more of a complementary than a replacing urban element. political aspects. Seen from a political point of view, the promotion of smaller housing types also favours a wide distribution of home ownership and at the same time improves the independence and self-determination of the owner. It represents a shift from the dependent tenant to the independent homeowner who can make his own decisions about his personal environment. A more pluralistic market can develop from the mainly state-controlled one from which private initiative has been pushed out, as statistics show. In such a market, private needs and participation have a much stronger influence than now. Not only is the influence of new ideas and innovations completely lacking with the big corporations, but also the individualization and democratization of the housing market. Fourth, summary. In conclusion, one might say that the housing type of the urban villa, containing a small number of individually designed apartments with additional non-residential uses, a broad spectrum of architectural vocabulary, and with a planned green open space, offers social, functional, economic, physical, and not the least, political features that cannot be met by any other housing type. That is the reason why this type should be more strongly supported through federal housing programs. Focusing on the problem of the city, on the question of the private versus the public housing market, the urban villa is obviously an answer to a series of problems that have to be resolved, especially in the city of Berlin. And then he has 6 dot points. First is the problem of the reduction of urban density and at the same time the improvement of the quality of the environment to prevent further outward movement. The second is the problem of the improvement of the urban quality in the sense of a diverse and enriched lifestyle. Third, the problem of creating a pluralistic urban environment with mutually unresolved contradictions as opposed to a unified one-dimensional urban system. The problem of the close connection between the built and the natural environment and therefore the relation between culture and nature. The problem of the personalization of architecture and likewise the improvement of the adaptation of the needs, wishes of the user. The problem of the demand to build smaller housing units to support a small-scale economy and to participate with private investors on the housing market and shift it from a state-controlled market to the private sector again. And that's the end. I suspect that that was his essay from a studio that he taught because the copyright sits with Studio Press for Architecture, 1977. So, okay, that was way drier than I thought it was going to be and way less architectural than I thought it was going to be. But I think it's interesting that a housing policy would be centered on a type, housing typology, because I think what happens instead, in at least what I've been witness to, is that the urban planning or the urban scale takes precedence and the housing unit comes second. And so what you get as a result, for example, is Matthew Guy's rezoning of agricultural areas into residential. Then the next layer, I suspect, is the purchase of large agricultural plots, say large farms by single developers like Stockland and Lendlease. And then the subdivision of those by them into one-family houses, as Ungers calls it. So it's almost by, like, the government policy is implicitly supporting the typology of the single house, the one family house. I think it just goes back, like, at least most of his arguments seem to still be like exactly what we discuss about housing issues today. And I think something that is much more interesting and fruitful than experimental forms of housing or like these competitions for new housing typologies or like new ways of living is to look at pre-existing typologies that are proven that we can look to. I don't think innovation and invention is the solution, despite what Silicon Valley might suggest.